Hello and welcome to Full Access Hoops and OTG Basketball Podcast. Be sure to head to otgbasketball.com for the latest and greatest NBA content out there. We're currently running a hire or fire series. We're playing GM for all 30 teams and breaking down who they should fire and who they should hire. Pretty self-explanatory in that department. Be sure to check out the OTG Podcast Network as well. We have Full Access Hoops. We have Just Ball Things, the Brooklyn Buzz, and the NBA Outlet, the flagship podcast, in which I co-host with Nick Fay. We started our team previews. We were going through division by division, team by team, previewing teams. We have majority of the Pacific out now. We actually had Jay on recently to do the Los Angeles Lakers, and Jay and me are back today for this episode of Full Access Hoops. Jay, how's it going, brother?
Corey, I'm doing all right, man. I'm in pre-draft camp in my NBA 2K My Career mode, so wish me luck as I test out my measurables and see if I can get from a mid-second round to solid first-round pick.
Okay, so now I got to know, what system do you play on, first off?
Well, Bill Gates signs my checks, man, so I play on the Xbox.
I like that. So, all right, so you have an online profile on Xbox.
So my son does, yes, and I kind of play on his. So,
nice. All right. So
that's way more friends than I do.
We're going to dive into this little draft. I'm interested now because you said you were on the fence. And now you started. So I made a guy too this past weekend, finally. So what did you make? What do you got cooking right now in your draft process?
So I can't help it. I don't know if you do this too. Like, when I used to do video games, I always kind of make a version, a better how I see myself in a pickup game, right? So I couldn't make myself a 7-footer because I'm not 7. It just felt weird being like, you know, making myself like Shaq, right? But I also couldn't make myself, you know, Steph Curry, for instance. So, I'm 6'5", 6'6". So I made myself, you know, a 2-guard, undersized 3 maybe. And I feel weird. Maybe this is just like, I couldn't lie and be like, oh, I'm the fastest guy because I'm not super fast. So I made myself a pretty good shooter, decent playmaker, pretty good wing defender, 3-and-D guy, basically. I think PJ Tucker with slightly more ball handling, maybe, which also says a lot about what I feel about myself personally, right? And internally, I could make myself whoever I wanted to be. And I made myself like, you know, maybe an upgrade slightly from PJ Tucker. So,
Your comparison when you finished making your guy? Do you remember the comparison?
So I think it was wrong. I think it was like, this could be all on dimensions. I got Ray Allen, Kobe, and one more other guy. Maybe James Harden, I want to say.
That's pretty good.
That's great. No, I thought that was good. But I think they were going all by measurables because I was like, ooh, I wouldn't shoot that high. So I started out, and I got to say, I think I liked 2K19's story a little better than this one. Okay. I just thought it was kind of neat to like, okay, this kid, in last year's version that, hey, it didn't quite work out, kind of work your way up and this kind of thing. Whereas this was kind of a weird, I'll put it this way. It had a lot of the uninterrupted thumb was definitely on the scale for this.
Oh, yeah.
It was definitely a more than an athlete theme to this storyline. I was like, Jesus, really? Is this what we're okay? And I'm not stick to sports guy. I mean, I think sports is inherently political. From the Olympics, from us not going in 80 and then the Russians not going in 84, Jesse Owens, Mexico 68, et cetera, et cetera. Sports and politics go together. So I'm not a stick to sports guy, but at the same time, I was like, okay, let's let's move this along. So one thing I'll say about on the court, I started some of the pre-draft workouts. I cannot figure out how to bench press to save my life.
Yeah,
I suck at it.
Never.
That was hard.
That's my worst. I you have to balance it so quickly. Like for example, I work out 6 days a week. Bench pressing is not that hard. All right. Like I be out there, it is not that tough to bench press. If you play 2K and you're worried about bench pressing because of how hard it is in 2K, it's not accurate. It's not that hard to balance a bar.
And never put that aside. Like, okay, a lot of things. I think we both could. Like, what are they doing? What are they doing? 145? How many times you can do it?
Okay. I believe so. Yeah.
I feel like we would just be dead last in every other statistical category. I think we could get the bar up, so many times in 45 seconds, comparable to some first round, some lottery picks, right? Like, I feel very confident we can go sit on the bench today and do 145, like, you know, more than Kevin Durant did or whoever else, right?
I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to flex right now. I feel like I could do at least 20. And I'm not sure where that puts me, but I feel like I could do at least 20.
Because that's just the 45s in the bar, right?
Right. I mean, that's what you're doing. Yeah, exactly. I feel like I could do 20 on a really good day, nice and fresh. I had a good breakfast, and I'm hydrated. I feel like I could get 20.
In, what is it, 45 seconds or a minute?
I think it's a minute.
Oh, yeah. 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 I mean, and I'm not even, yeah, I'm like you. I'm not saying, and I don't know if you can take a, I think you can take a break as long as you don't rack it, right? Like, so
yeah, it's yeah. There. You can pause for a second if you need to. Yeah, I'm pretty sure you have a full minute to do as many as you can.
That's interesting. Now, I probably told them myself, but what is the drill you think, okay, if I'm going to embarrass myself, quote unquote, in front of all these NBA scouts, I want to try this. What is the drill at the combine where you think, okay, I'm gonna give this a shot, and I feel the most confident in this.
The most confident in it? Definitely the bench press. If there's something I'm gonna do just because I want to see, probably the vertical jump, even though I'm not gonna respect myself following the realization I just don't have hops like that. But I think that would be the one I would be okay with embarrassing myself just to do.
Standing or running?
Oh, running. We're not doing. I need some momentum behind me, so at least it looks a little bit better.
So no, I was curious. So no sprint, no shuttle run, no cone drill, nothing like that.
I got a bad right knee, so I don't know what the speed's like. I'm
bad. Blow out your
knee. More embarrassing.
Right. You shredded ACL when you.
Yeah, I'll get a non-contact injury at the combine.
Right. So what do you think of the my career story? By the way, I started my career and it's like I was thinking, do I have the, I don't know if I have the stamina for the GM mode. So, but I don't know if I have the stamina for my career. So I don't know. At least I'm playing in my career mode. But so what are your thoughts? What are you thinking?
So I made a small forward, and I'm the same way. I make him so it's similar to me. Like, I'm a person who doesn't really have a jump shot, but I like to facilitate and play defense and get to the rim. Of course, the guy I made, his first comparison was LeBron James. So I was like, all right, I guess this is the best guy to use because I've been compared to LeBron James twice in my life on a pickup game court. No cap. I think that's what the young kids say. And I'm pretty young, but still. So yeah, I made him a LeBron James build. I'm in like game 10. I play a little bit this weekend. And it's fun. Definitely, they really want you to play. Like, if you have a social life or a life in general, 2K is time consuming because I played 10 games and my guy's rank is still pretty low. But it's fun nonetheless. They put a lot of effort into making these storylines as if it's like a movie to a degree or a TV show. So that's cool. Makes playing a little bit more entertaining, but there's just like a lot of time needed. And like you, I don't know if I can really put in that time, especially with the NBA season fast approaching.
God, no. Who'd you sign with for your shoe deal?
I did Nike.
Yeah, same here.
Boring. I thought about Puma just to be different, but I was like, what are they gonna give me? What are they really gonna get? So I went
like, with you're stiff arming Puma even in 2K land. You're like, no, Puma, come on.
Yeah.
But I'll let you know about market share, right? Like, even in pretend, it's like I wouldn't pretend to wear Puma. Fuck that.
Yeah. So I went with Nike. And of course I got drafted by the Pacers, so I'm playing with my boys, so that's entertaining.
Who'd you work out with?
I worked out with the Pacers. And then the Brooklyn Nets and the Dallas Mavericks.
Mavericks, interesting.
Yeah, I thought there could be a nice little like small ball lineup with, you know, Porzingis, Doncic, and myself.
Nice.
But yeah, didn't work out. On the different things. So I had to go a different way. So enough of the 2K talk, but 2K is fun. So I'm glad you're giving the my career a chance. Something to pass some time.
It's not bad. It's a good you're right. It's good to, you know, pop on an OTG podcast and just play a game, you know. It's a good way to spend an afternoon, you know.
Exactly. And actually, for OTG, I'll plug Tyler Yates, one of our contributors to OTGBasketball.com. He actually runs a YouTube channel, and he's been doing a lot of YouTube content for OTG now, doing like rebuilds for teams, hypotheticals of what would, like, say Curry on the Charlotte Hornets, would they be able to win a title? So that's kind of fun. So definitely check out that. I appreciate Tyler for the work he does for OTG in the Central Division as well. But now to the sadder part of this podcast, Team USA is done. They've been a hot topic on this podcast for the last couple weeks as we speculated on should we have faith in Team USA. They probably don't deserve our faith, but they should have our faith. Who's the standout guy? Who's going to gain the most experience? And we finished seventh.
Yikes.
It went bad. The team was flawed. Not having big men and having to play Harrison Barnes a lot of minutes at center, probably not great. Why we didn't use a lot of Brook Lopez or Mason Plumlee besides me. Miles Turner, I've been on the hype train. Definitely need to cool down a little bit. Kemba has proven, and this is no slight to Kemba because he's a great player, but he's definitely not a tier one, tier two player. Like, he's probably a tier three. Like, if you're looking at superstars, he's probably just outside of those guys. And then Donovan Mitchell, I think there's a lot of potential, but he shows that he still has a long way to go. So, yeah, thoughts on Team USA finishing seventh? And I know you had an awesome thread on this, too.
Oh, thank you, friend. I did. And I'll probably regurgitate some of that here. I had a few pins in a couple things. One, with the Donovan Mitchell thing, I feel like, I don't know if it was on the outlet or on this pod, but we were talking about the best duos. And I think you and Nick had Mitchell and maybe Gobert.
Yeah, it was
had a Russ. Yeah, and I would kind of push back on that just because, one, there are two MVPs with Harden and Russell. And two, I'm biased. I mean, just full disclosure. But and more importantly, I still thought I could hear the argument for Gobert today being ahead of Mitchell. You know, if I had to pick one of those guys to take, I'd take Gobert. And he, you know, played great international ball, which is to say, I mean, there's some guys that, you know, do really well international and then maybe not as great in the pros. I don't think Gobert's one of those guys. I think he's been awesome in both. But, you know, just sort of the Donovan Mitchell thing, I think, you know, you talk about cooling on Miles Turner. I still think the guy's pretty young, a lot of potential. Same with Mitchell. I think there should be a little cooling on that train. Not to say that he won't be great, but I don't think it's coming quite as fast as people have predicted, which is also interesting. It's getting me on a tangent here. But in sort of the YouTube highlight world we live in, I think, you know, you can be made in a moment, right? Or a few moments, right? I mean, you think of someone, and this is completely going off the rails, but I think someone like Dame Lillard, who I love, who I think is awesome, who ranks as one of the top guards in the league. But if you look at after him eliminating OKC, what he did the rest of the playoffs, for instance, it's really not that, I mean, if it was Russell Westbrook or Chris Paul, we would be flaming him, right? But since it's Dame Lillard and he calls game on Paul George and he had the shot against Houston a few years ago, those moments are there for us. So I think Dame gets a pass. Just to point to my example about YouTube sort of making or breaking stars today and sort of the social media, our attention spans 8 seconds or less sort of world we live in now. Anyways, what I think about Team USA? A lot of jokes on Twitter were like, basically the Celtics, right? It was Kemba and Jaylen.
That's been the running joke.
And to your Kemba point, I think this bodes well for the Celtics, and I'll tell you why. I think my biggest criticism of Brad Stevens is he's still a college coach. That's why he works really well with younger guys, with the Isaiah Thomases of the world. The thing about the pros is you got to know how to manage personalities. I mean, they're just a 30-30 for Dennis Rodman. I don't see anywhere in any universe where Brad Stevens could coach Dennis Rodman. You know, Phil Jackson could, Greg Popovich could, Larry Brown could, et cetera, et cetera. So Kemba not being the tier one star, I think actually bodes well for the Boston Celtics program that they have going, the sort of cohesive, it's team, this guy is good, but he's not like Kyrie, enigmatic, you know, the world is flat, good, kind of weird tier one guy, personality wise. So I think that bodes good for the Celtics. Team USA, yeah, man, seventh. I did not have that one in my pool. I thought maybe fifth, a third would have been respectable with this team, to be honest with you. I did not have seventh, but I will say that I do not buy into the demise of Team USA basketball. But I can get, we can get into that a little bit more. But those are my initial thoughts, is like, I didn't have them winning, but I did not have them at seventh. So go figure.
Yeah. It just wasn't a good roster. I mean, mm-hmm. we just expect, because we're Team USA and we do have more notoriety in our players. Obviously, that's no slight to European nations, Serbia, France even. I mean, all of these teams, the talent for the NBA is just more spread out now than ever before. Those teams have big-time players who can show up in big moments. I mean, Rudy Gobert, he sunned Miles Turner in that last game.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, he did. Yes, he did.
Talking about defensive player of the year to a guy who was second or third in the conversation, and they were light years apart.
Shout out to Joe Lacob.
Good reference. I just don't think we lacked the superstars. You know, you miss guys like LeBron, even Melo. I think Melo would have had an impact on this team to a degree. Mm-hmm. So I just think it was a flawed roster. I wholeheartedly expect more notable names to be included and on this team come the Olympics next year. I feel like there's going to be a resurgence in the fact that we got so, you know, it's first time in what, like 20 years that we lost back-to-back games. The first time was 2002, we lost back-to-back games, 2004. Right. So we're not used to losing like this and finishing seventh. Right. I mean, it was unfortunate. I'm going to watch a lot of these games and put them on ESPN Plus like a bunch of douches. I was pretty much watching someone like on their phone would stream it onto like Periscope on Twitter, and yep. I would watch it from someone else holding their phone. But you know, we got to be better.
This is what I tweeted about, because I think they had Kobe, who's somehow the ambassador, which we got to talk about Kobe's IG post or whatever at some point.
Yeah, that's a good
that
topic.
Came from that. it was great. And they asked, and he's like, you know, Kobe's point was, or the comment he made was, you know, USA basketball, sort of the days of us dominating are gone. And he cited, you know, even when we won in 2008 with the Redeem team, it was still close. And, you know, in the championship game against Spain, it took a late surge, et cetera, et cetera. So we're just not going to dominate like we used to. And in my thread, I said, I think that's right, but I also think it's wrong. First of all, the fact that it's news if we lose speaks to our dominance, right? If we'd breeze through this tournament, this wouldn't have been a blip anywhere, right? We've got notifications on our phones from the NBA app, and that's about it. But it wouldn't have been on SportsCenter, wouldn't have been anywhere if we just breezed through the tournament. I think what is done is the days of us playing Cuba taking pictures with us before the game, and we beat them by 50, and they're just happy to be getting dunked on by Michael Jordan. Those days are gone, yes. From the world becoming more global, and you know, the presence of someone like Michael Jordan and the influence of Nike making it a global game. When I was sitting on my couch watching the Dream Team, you know, there were the Gasol brothers in Spain doing the same thing, growing up wanting to be like Magic Johnson and Scottie Pippen, et cetera, et cetera. So yes, the countries with the resources started to catch up. Players that weren't quite good for the NBA went overseas, you know. Kobe's dad, for instance, and many other players became coaches, taught, you know, basketball, taught an American game to European nations, and then vice versa. Really good European players start coming to the NBA. You think someone like Arbenis Sabonis, for instance, 1984-85, he was the best center in the world, you know, including Patrick Ewing and Hakeem Olajuwon, right? But because of, you know, geopolitical influences, he couldn't come play in the States until, when did he come, like 98, and he's a shell of himself by then. Right. But from that influence and that exchange of the game, yes, European nations caught up, but the best basketball is still played in the United States. And if we send our A squad, and I hate to say that for guys that are infinitely better than I am, that, you know, hate to, you know, degrade the team that just went over there and played, but if we send our best team to me, it's not even close. And I said it in my thread, like in 2004, that's where we lost, and that's where we got the Colangelos involved, and we did the program, because the perception was we were just sending 12 All-Stars out there. They were practicing for 2 weeks, and then they were playing. And that was true to an extent. But and so we said, we need more role players. We need more guys. We need more Lamar Odoms and Sean Marions and guys like that to be a part of the team. While I get that, I think when we send our best, 12 to 14 guys over in the program, I don't think it's even close. On my thread, I said, okay, these are the guys on the All-NBA team who, could have been on our team. Just say we made that team from 2004 All-NBA, and it's like Jason Kidd, Kobe, Shaq, Garnett, T-Mac, Duncan. Like, that team beats the Argentina team from 2004. That team sure as hell beats the Greek team that beat us that year, with a 19-year-old LeBron James and D-Wade was a year into his, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't think that American basketball is losing its spot. Yes, the gap has closed, but you got to remember too, and this is what I said in my thread, Spain right now, this is the best basketball Spain's ever had with the Gasol brothers, and conveniently having guys like Serge Ibaka with Spanish passports, Rick Rubio, Rudy Fernandez, best basketball in a generation. Argentina, Ginobili, Scola, Nocioni, that literally is dubbed the golden era of Argentine basketball. That's the best basketball they've ever had in Argentina. So from the two best eras of those countries, like ever, they've managed to pull out a gold medal against us in 2004, which was, I think, admittedly not our best team, headlined by Emeka Okafor and Lamar Odom. And then some silvers and some bronzes playing us, since we went to this, professional format. Compare those two countries, and this is the last thing I'll say about it. Compare Spain and Argentina for what they have in terms of talent, and what Spain and Argentina going to look like in the next 20 years. Go back to our original dream team. After every player that was on that 92 team, I can find another player subsequent to that. So in other words, players after 1992 that's better than someone on that dream team, right? So what I mean, you can have, Tim Duncan, probably the best power forward ever. It's probably better than Barkley and Malone. Mm-hmm. Shaquille O'Neal is probably better than Patrick Ewing and David Robinson. Steph Curry better than Stock, et cetera, et cetera. I can find players. The exception I left out in my thread was Michael Jordan. It's still the best, even though I'm on the LeBron camp on that. But even if I concede that argument, so even after that, we've replenished the stock of players that are infinitely better, or not infinitely, but better than the people we put on 92 Dream Team. The team we called the greatest team ever assembled, we have subsequent to that had players that are better than those guys. Better than those guys. I can make a team from 2008, from 2012, that would beat that team, that 92 Dream Team. So I don't know if Spain has that. I don't know if Argentina has that. And what will be really interesting, I didn't put this in my thread, but just from a sort of geopolitical standpoint, a lot of sub-Saharan African nations, they are, with their basketball programs, where Europe was in 1992 and 1990, just getting it off the ground, right?
Right.
It'll be interesting to see if the Siakams and the Ibakas and all those guys from sub-Saharan Africa, rather than getting passports and playing for these European nations, if they actually start investing in building their programs and seeing where Africa comes up in terms of international basketball in the next 15 to 20 years. So, because that helps out a lot of teams too, that guys, from African nations have these European passports and can play. And part of that's because they play international basketball, right? So you get the passport, and that's a whole game about how you can have so many naturalized citizens on your team. But that's another pod for another day. But so that'll be the interesting thing to watch is when those guys, if we say, hey, let's build up our program here instead of sending our guys over to other teams to play. So all that long-winded diatribe to say, I don't think USA basketball is in as much trouble as people perceive it to be. Are we beating people by 60? No, but it's supposed to be the best basketball tournament in the world, so you're not going to beat everybody by 60 points. I still think, bar none, pound for pound, USA basketball is still the program that everyone is chasing around the world.
So now, this is my next question and thought on this. Is the experience for these players the same when you come up and finish seventh, or is the experience less because they didn't have success? Like I remember on an earlier pod, you and me talked about how, for example, the Redeem team, right? Mm-hmm. LeBron, Chris Paul, Carmelo, Kobe, all those guys in 08 or 09 when they came back and they had that, when they won, all those guys came back to have tremendous NBA seasons. Mm-hmm. Is if you come up short, what does the experience translate to that NBA season? Like, are all these, like, should we expect nothing now from these guys? Like, is this experience less of experience because they came up short, or is this more, like, how do we gauge how some of these players will look beyond this tournament?
That's a great question. That's interesting because I wonder, I guess the only comparison I can think of, two actually, one is probably 2004 Olympic team in Greece where we came up really short. Not really short, got the bronze. And then the 94, was it 94 or 98? Maybe 94, where it was the World Games and we didn't win. And that was sort of the first sort of dent in the armor, I think, for sending pros. In 98, I think there was a strike, so we had like college guys, and there's just a bunch of talk about randos. It was like the replacements, but for basketball, which we actually did well considering the roster. And that was actually like an overachieving team. That's interesting. I mean, I think that, on the one hand, I could see those guys being like, well, I just kind of blew my summer doing this. I don't know, like, what's the point? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I mean, like, I think, like, obviously they still got to learn from Popovich, Steve Kerr. You're still playing underneath head coaches. You're still getting run time in a high-pressure environment. Mm-hmm. But, like, guys like Donovan Mitchell, Miles Turner, Jason Tatum, like, those three in particular were guys pinpointed that were going to use this experience from Team USA to take that next step farther. And I just want – maybe I'm rewording the question again. Of those three guys in particular, does this experience help them or do nothing for them is what I should be asking.
I said I think it does nothing, or not as much as it would have. Like, there's a clip that goes around right where they're in 2000 maybe. They're playing in Sydney, Australia. The USA basketball team is playing King of the Hill in practice. And Garnett, gets a buck. He stays on the court. It's a clip about Garnett because he stays on the court for like 8 straight trips. He gets a bucket on Jason Kidd, gets one on Jermaine O'Neal, comes back, gets someone on Sharif Abdul-Rahim. And I think you get that. So that jump in your game comes from playing the best in the game, I think. So I think that the guys that you mentioned, I don't know if it'll be as significant because it just wasn't the same competitive environment, right? The greatest game ever played in, Olympic folklore is that scrimmage with Magic and Michael, right? One game and behind closed doors on the Dream Team in 92, right? That's 11 Hall of Famers going at it in a closed gym practice, which people would pay gobs of money to watch that unedited from start to finish. But I don't think that same experience was there in this international basketball trip. So I don't know if the jump will be as significant for those guys. I don't think the experience paid off as it has in the past when you're playing against guys in your sort of top shelf peer group, right? If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that's pretty much how I feel on this topic.
Now if Tatum was going up against Harden every day and Klay Thompson and it's LeBron, yeah, then Tatum comes back and is like, okay, that's another gear, that's another level. Because it's still ego, right? You make it to that level of professional basketball or professional sports because you have an ego and you want to see yourself against the very best. Not trashing the guys on that team because they're all infinitely better than I've ever been on a basketball court. But there's just something different, right? Like you go because you want to go up against the best in the game and you learn from them. And, I don't think it's the same experience with this crop of players.
Right. No, I would agree with that. Because I don't think Miles Turner is going to have quite the season I thought he did. Because I was really thinking that this time with Team USA would take him to that next level. And when he finally got matched up with someone we know is a level above him in Rudy Gobert, Rudy Gobert showed that he is still clearly a level above him.
Right.
So that was like my eye-opening experience from this.
You're down on this Miles Turner thing, man. He's young.
Yeah,
he's...
I was really hyped on it, and I was like riding the hype train, and I've been pushing it all off season, and that just wasn't good. That's like my Trae Young going to be out of the league in 6 years take. Just not not great.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I pontificated long enough, but what are your thoughts on Team USA? Are we in trouble? Are we in danger? Or is this much ado about nothing?
I mean, I think we're in danger if we're not going to have any top 25 players on the roster. Or one. I think Kemba Walker's top 25. I apologize, Kemba. But I think we're in trouble if we're not going to be pushing out, you know, the best of the best from our country. You know, with the, as you mentioned, it's not that we're still not going to be favorites, but the talent gap is just tighter. And if you have young and inexperienced guys who don't really know how to win on an NBA level yet, why should they know how to win at a global level yet? So I think the gap is definitely smaller and tighter. And I think if you really want to be a lock to win gold, you need to have, you know, the, not LeBron James per se, but you need to have, you know, Stephen Curry, Kevin Durant, James Harden. You need to have all-star, superstar-level talent, aside from just Kemba.
And I know the answer to this, I think, from, like, the hot take machine, embrace debate, air quotes, that we, society that we live in. But how would you feel, how would you react as a basketball fan if we said, okay, we're maybe not getting the guys we want. We want to continue to grow and develop our players. We'll make USA basketball look. We can see, we know we're the best. And world, if you start getting too big in your britches, we can send the SEAL Team 6 and make sure you guys, you know, understand how the cow chews the cabbage, right? But we are going to say, for the development of our basketball in our country, we're going to make USA basketball 25 and under, right? We're gonna send our young guys. If there's a stud that happens to be 21, so be it. But we're making it a select team, basically. We're sending our youth, we're sending our young guys to work with the Coach K's and the Greg Popovich and Steve Kerr's of the world. And we're purposely not sending superstars, right? We're going to send our young talent. We're going to send some college kids. We're going to send rookies, you know, like I say, 25 and under, 24 and under, something like that. We're going to get out of the kicking ass and taking names business of USA basketball. We've proven our point, right? If you need us to prove it, we can prove it again. But I think we all know that the best basketball is still played in America. Would you, as a fan, be okay with implementing that program, knowing that, hey, these guys are going to go up against the Gasols, and these kids are going to go up against France, these kids are going to go up against all these other countries, and we might have a few seventh-place finishes, we might have some fifth-place finishes, and gold is not guaranteed. Would you be okay as a fan saying, hey, I know what the score is, I know we're doing this for a larger point of just developing our players in this country. Would you be okay with that, or is that a bridge too far for international basketball?
If we're gonna say 25 and under and make it strictly 25 and under, like if we're coming into this all on the same page, then I really don't have a problem with it. Will I be tuned in as much? Maybe not, because I think our expectations go are severely lower if we're playing with 25 and under guys. Although, again, you know, you get a good bunch of young guys, a bunch of hungry young guys. I think the experience, them, as you mentioned, you know, playing underneath Coach K, Popovich, Kerr, you know, some of the best coaches we have to offer. I think that's information and knowledge beneficial to all these young guys. But I think the expectation then of us winning gold goes down severely if they're getting matched up with the Gasols still around the world.
And I'm wondering, because they're to be... You know, to be clear, there are plenty of great players that are under 25 that we have, right? But, you know, I wonder, because I, you know, I feel like it'd be another overreaction. It's like, USA basketball gets fourth. What the hell? We need to do the program over. And I'm kind of, I feel like I'm a little more rational than that. I'm like, everyone relax. These guys are not, we didn't send the A squad. Everyone calm down. We're bigger purpose than this. Or maybe that's the goal in every other international competition, and then we send, we send the LeBrons of the world and whatnot to the Olympics, and then we say, look, this the rest of the international competition, FIBA, World Cup, whatever, it's all an incubator, right, for our young players, and then they can graduate to Team USA for the Olympics, and then we'll mix them with a couple of you know, the LeBrons and Durants of the world. I don't know. I don't think it's that crazy, but I know how sort of how reactionary we are in sort of hot take land. So I don't think that'll fly. I think the first time it, you know, the first time we get, well, I was going to say the first time we get seventh, but we got seventh this week. So I mean, I don't know. I think it's just an interesting thought exercise, but you know, what the hell do I know?
I'm done talking about Team USA.
All right, let's move it along, man. Let's go. Team USA. We'll see you in 2020.
So I think before we talk about the OTG top 50, we should talk on just a little bit of the what so much that context is important. And maybe not context, because I'm not positive still that we didn't see a mastery in bending the truth to fit whatever message he was trying to put out there. Kobe put up a photo on Instagram. The team that he coaches, they finished fourth. He had a bunch of kids standing in the photo, or as he said, the kids wanted to take the photo, looking miserable, unhappy with him as the Sith Lord standing above them, looking at the empire that they're starting to create only come up fourth and being like the Death Star just blew up. All right. And he's trying to recoup. And he's got Darth Vader out of dance lessons, not taking serious his, I'm just trying to draw a comparison now. But basically, you know,
you're going to run that Star Wars.
Yeah, I figure I'd just keep going with it. So a seventh grader didn't show up, and Kobe had to like note it. He goes, we were missing one player, a seventh grader who was at dance, shows where her priorities are. And upon a first read, it sounds like, wow, you prick. him justifying it is, I was just giving context that she had her priorities on dance, and there's nothing wrong with having your priorities on dance. I'm just saying the truth is she had her priorities on dance, which also could very well be the case. I mean, if she was at dance, he's telling the truth, she was at dance. If you're at dance over your basketball game, which is like that's a championship priority. Game, you probably yep. have that over your priorities. I mean, that's all truth. Yep. So now, you know, Twitter goes into the usual uproar of, wow, we got to cancel Kobe. This guy's a menace. Can you imagine being this miserable that you make fourth graders look so depressed and defeated? What were some of your thoughts? Because I know you're a parent. What were some of your thoughts on the Kobe is a menace?
I thought so. Sorry, one thing you just said about canceling Kobe, and this is totally not what you asked me, but my mind sort of thinks extemporaneously, so I apologize in advance. But I'm surprised, and I don't want to take it to a dark place, but I'm surprised we haven't canceled, the collective social media, hasn't canceled Kobe yet.
Given the coalescence of
the Me Too movement, Littleton, Colorado, we don't need to go into that. And it's weird because on the one hand, Kobe's been this outspoken advocate for WNBA. He has daughters playing basketball for sort of promoting the game. And I'm surprised. And I mean, honestly, I'll be truly transparent here. I'm glad so far that the movement hasn't come to swallow him up yet, because I just knew, like, man, Kobe's promoting WNBA. He's at the Sparks games. He's coaching his girls. So putting aside, you know, the little fun we're going to have here in a second, talking about his AAU team. I just was read Twitter and be like, man, it's going to be a matter of time where someone's like, well, in 2004, Kobe did this and here's the whole police report. And that hasn't happened that I've seen. And I'm quite frankly, a little shocked, but I'm again, also glad, because I think Kobe is a good ambassador for promoting the game like that. And I think that's a good use of his, in my opinion, the use of his celebrity and sort of star power to help promote the WNBA and girls participating in sports. But I will say
people do call him out. Like I know a lot of people on that post for the kids were even saying, you know, once again, Kobe's somehow this guy always around women and the WNBA as if he didn't, you know,
So that's good.
There is definitely a subculture on NBA Twitter, which, you know, I would have to say probably like in the lower percent, but I would say like 20-30% who are anti Kobe because of the fact that he has a sketchy dark past. But again, right. We find, you know, Kobe, like you said, first off, the fact that he made his own Black Mamba. Like, that was whatever made him create that somehow was able to put the dark past behind him, because then Mamba mm-hmm. mentality became the thing we thought of with Kobe. Mm-hmm. So like he revamped his image directly after the issues he had legally. Right. And then, like you said, he's become such an ambassador for the WNBA. You know, he's got his ESPN Plus show that he does, details, you know, and he's survived really the bad past he's had. And it's make a good point. It's interesting how no one's really came from him when, you know, I guess it's the same degree why our buddy OJ Simpson is so popular.
The juice. Yeah. I will push back on one thing, which drives me. This is kind of like the Air Bud thing. This is like pet peeve of mine. Nobody else probably has it. I mean, Mamba mentality, yes, that is a thing. The vessel with which he created it is a total ripoff from Kill Bill. I mean, the symbol, Black Mamba, that was on TV the other day. Uma Thurman, the symbol that's on her sword is what the Mamba symbol is. I mean, it's a total ripoff from Kill Bill. I mean, she was Black Mamba. There's a whole thing when she's with Vivica Fox's character, and Vivica Fox is like, why are you Black Mamba? You're not even black, which I thought was hilarious at the time. So yes, Kobe being a psychopath is a real thing. That he's the Mamba, totally ripped off from Quentin Tarantino, and I will not hear arguments otherwise. But
that's fair. I didn't know that, so that's fair.
Yeah, go back and watch the movie. Look at the symbol on her Hirihanso's sword. That's his whole Mamba symbol, and she's the Black Mamba. Now, again, the mentality and Kobe being freaking nuts, that is real. That is Kobe's, and he embraced that. I remember the ad he did around Colorado time was, you know, love me or hate me. It's always been the same. It's either or with me, right? But understand that as much as you hate me, they're the same people that love me for all these things. And I think he said, look, I'm going to quit trying to be like Mike with my mannerisms and stuff, and I'm Kobe. I am a nutty person, and I'm going to play with a broken finger and shoot left hand, and Mamba mentality shooting 50 times a game, et cetera, et cetera. But you didn't ask me about Kobe. I got off on a tangent. I'm going to quit trying to do that in 2020, but it's still 2019. So on the back to the team and that post, I feel like a politician as a dad, as a father with children. I'm not at those practices, so I have no idea what Kobe's like as a coach and as a person. And I think, you know, when my kids first start playing sports, you know, it was all about having fun and good sportsmanship, but there are lessons to be learned in sports. So like if my boys start something and about halfway through, they're not feeling it, I always tell them, like, look, we're going to finish the season. And if you don't want to do it next year, that's fine. But there are lessons to learn about commitment and giving your word. You know, there are days when my kids don't want to go to practice, but they want to hang out with their friends. And I'm like, well, you know, you gave your word. You committed to playing the season. And that includes going to practice when you don't want to, right? Because there are times in life where you get up and go to work when you don't want to, right? So they're valuable lessons to be learned in sports. So I don't know what Kobe, I preface all that to say, I don't know what Kobe's like as a coach. He might be very warm and endearing and funny with these kids and just, you know, I can't imagine him with human interactions and emotions, but maybe he's like that. But I think that I feel like Kobe's a weirdo that way, and like, hey, I got to get up at 3 a.m. to get my workout in. But I also feel like, I mean, he's embracing this sort of like this Mamba mentality sort of as like a heel, like a wrestling character, right? So I think he had an interview like a year or two ago where he was talking about, oh, I don't have any friends, you know, I have no friends, what I need friends for. Just a very dickish way to go, like, you know, it's like, come on, Kobe, I know you have friends. Like, Bill Belichick has friends. We don't know them and don't talk to him, but he goes to dinner with people. Like, no one is that miserable, right? But I think he just kind of, he found his voice with the Mamba mentality and be like, I am this weirdo. I'm not Michael Jordan. I'm just this different cat. And I think that was liberating for him. But now I feel like he's taking a little like, you have to, you know, I'm going to play with a broken hand because I'm Kobe and that's what you do. And it's just like, just calm down, man. I don't know. Like so I saw that post and I just thought it was, I didn't think it was like stage dad. I just thought it was like, man, you're just extra. I just thought it was extra. Right. Does that make sense? Like
he's just, he's playing a character almost.
Yes. Yes. It's like, look at these girls. I'm like, no. And I thought about it, like, I went to the gym this morning and there's a guy with his son shooting and this kid is probably older than my oldest son's 10. And this kid's shooting today was probably like 12. And it was like 6:30 in the morning, which, you know, if the kid's up and he wants to shoot, that's fine. I was thinking, ah, I could get my son out of bed and get him, you know, like Jesus Shuttlesworth style. But I was also like, he's 10. And, you know, if he wants to do that one day, then there's still plenty of time to do that. Like, there's no need for me to do that for him now. He's in the fifth grade, right? So I'm probably one of those parents that are like, you know, it'll come to you when it comes to you. Like, I didn't start playing basketball till the fifth grade. And it turned out all right for me. But I'm not like one of those driver, you know, push the kids kind of parents. Kobe seems like he might be, and that's my point. He may not even be. He's just doing it, like you say, like it's like a shtick. It's like a, like, look how intense my girls are doing suicides at 4 a.m.
He also,
like,
might. Why? It's also not his kids too.
Like, right. Well,
pushing aren't his kids, so it's not like he has to feel any guilt about wearing out his own kids.
Right. I will say real quick, the funniest, like, they're the meme. So now I see the memes going around. One, the one that's really popular, it's the Kobe, his comments, but like different teams plastered on there. Like the Warriors are there as a photo, and then like the Rockets, and it's the same Kobe, Kobe words, which are pretty funny. But there's also one, there are just some different memes coming up where I saw one that's like, Kobe's like, this girl's like speaking to Kobe, and she says, "Hey, Kobe, my dad just died. I don't think I'm going to go to practice today." And he's like, "Do you think skipping practice will bring him back?" that was great. And he had this very stern look in this picture. But I don't know, man. I feel like it's just stick.
What do so you think? Do you? So now the question is: do you believe Kobe? Was it a slight at the dancer, or was it him just giving context in a brash way?
There's a slight. I mean, he's a grown man. He's 40 years old. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know what you're doing. Like, Kobe's been right in the public eye since he was 17.
Like when he started justifying it, I was like, you really just were able to like give yourself an out because of how you worded it. But I was like, there's no way that you calling out a seventh grader on a post like that isn't some sort of slight.
Well, and here's the other thing too, and I've seen this with Kobe in interviews before, and I appreciate this about him. I will say, I like this more about him than I do say Shaq. He says, he likes the conflict, which I think that makes him a bit of a sociopath. But before that, he's like, I believe in being honest with you. He's like, if you have something on your teeth or in your nose, I'm going to tell you, hey man, you got a bug hanging or you got something in your teeth. Like, don't sit there in the awkwardness. Just tell me, I want you to be honest and say, hey man, you got something in your teeth so I can get it out and we can move on. So I say that to say, like, Kobe by design is a very sort of forward person. So I don't think there's any like, oh, I just meant that, you know, she just likes dance more than basketball, but she's come around. I think you meant what you said when you posted it, that this bitch doesn't want to play. So she went to go dance and we lost because she was out dancing. I think that's what he meant, right? Mm-hmm. I think he was trying to backtrack it. I think, so that's what I mean. I think Kobe, he doesn't do the LeBron social media thing, right? With these sort of cryptic posts. I think Kobe's a very straightforward, a straight shooter off the court, right? Hey-o. No. Okay. Worth the shot, man. Yeah, so I don't buy his explanation at all. I think he read that, and maybe Vanessa said, "What the hell's wrong with you? Like, we have to carpool with these people. Like, what are you, like, right? Like, the girls go to school with these girls. What are you doing?" And she probably talked him off the ledge a little bit. But I think he's just super competitive. Like, Kobe grew up in Italy with no friends, and he's talked about this. Like, basketball, like, it's funny, right? Like, basketball for LeBron James was, it was family, right? I didn't grow up with family. My mom and I were moving all the time. I think I saw something one time, LeBron missed like damn near 100 days in fourth grade because he moved around so much, right? Right. And then so he found family in basketball. That's why LeBron enjoys basketball, because it's family. For Kobe, he was this, you know, Black American in Italy, didn't speak the language, away from his family and friends. And so basketball for him became solitaire, right? It was his refuge, it was his comfort. And so he just, it consumed him, you know, because it was a very lonely place for him. And he's always sort of been this loner. And so I think he takes that sort of competitive, single-mindedness approach to everything. So I can see Kobe, when he's coaching and everything, to be very sort of like, oh man, like maniacal about it, right? And so I think that post was very pointed and intentional. And not like, oh, I just meant that she just likes dancing. I thought it was a bullshit, like, cover up. I thought that was bad.
Yeah. I'm interested to see what the parents thought of it. I would like to know if the parents reached it, or if the parent reached it. Maybe parent. I mean, I'm sure the parents followed Kobe, right? If Kobe's coaching your dad,
Yeah. But so let me ask you this. So do you say anything? Because it is Kobe, though, at the same time. Because I know parents that, you know, growing up in West Texas, you know, everybody plays football and stuff. And you'd have, like, a football coach, like, you know, you let your kids play for this guy. And parents are like, hey, you know, listen to Kobe, listen to whoever. Because they're the coach, and especially if they, like, growing up in West Texas, like, especially some guy was, like, a high school or college football star. Like, if he said, run through these flaming tires, the parents would be like, hey, run through the tires. Coach knows what he's talking about. So do you think those parents got upset, or are they just like, hey, our girls are on Kobe's team, and we want them to be like Kobe. We want them, you know, we want you to be the next Mamba, right? Do you think they care, or?
I think unless you're the seventh grader who was at the dance recital, you probably don't care.
Right.
I think that's the only family I would think might have a slight gripe.
But they might have pulled her out of dance. I mean, they might want her to, like, I'm serious. I mean, I could see I've seen situations. I mean, they might say, don't dance. We want you to get a full ride to Stanford on a basketball scholarship. And
yeah.
Whatever Kobe says, do, because, you know, we want you to end up playing Pac-12 basketball or go to the WNBA or whatever. So
you could tell it's a slow time in the NBA. Like, this was really like a powerful, like, day long topic when it came up. God damn, I miss basketball.
Have you been following Dwight Howard? Speaking of slow time, do you follow him on IG or on Twitter?
I saw the video of him somewheres in LA blocking a kid being a dick. He was having fun. Everyone was having fun. But he looked in shape. He can still get up there. I'm intrigued. The hairstyle is a little bit different, mixing it up.
I'm not liking that. It's really bothering me. That and the, like, halfway mutton chops are not really doing it for me.
Yeah.
Not that he cared. It's not.
But I'm intrigued. I think he actually does look like he's primed to have a decent year if he can stay healthy, because I think he's actually in really good shape right now.
I just think he's better. And this we talked about on when we previewed the Lakers. And so, speaking of 2K, I was just messing around on a quick game the other day, and I went to the starting line. I was like, nope, Dwight Howard's starting. He's my starting center. Like, I mean, it's a very intentional move to start Dwight Howard. I just think if he's healthy, I just think he's better than JaVale McKee. I really do. And I think he offers more. And so far, he's saying all the right things and doing all the right things. And I don't know. It's funny. I think he's been more in the community in LA than LeBron was his first summer there last year. Like, LeBron signed with the Lakers and, like, went to south of France for the rest of the summer, right? And I think Dwight Howard's on his bike in Venice Beach, and he's dunking and blocking kids and hanging out and just kind of being Dwight Howard. I mean, I don't know. He looks kind of at peace and also ready to go, which is exciting.
Yeah, no, I think Dwight looks happy. And that, you make a good point. Dwight's definitely trying to fix his image. Because if you think about it this way as well, if anyone needs to rebuild a relationship with the city of LA, it's probably Dwight Howard. I'm not sure, you know, wounds heal in time. I'm not sure how people still feel on that Dwight Howard 1 year saga. But, I mean, he's doing, like you said, he's saying all the right things, doing all the right things. And I agree. I think he's going to be really good for them this year. I have a feeling that LeBron and AD are going to figure out ways to get him even more involved in these later parts of his career.
Agreed.
What else do we have? Oh, I don't know if I want to do the top. I guess we can mention it quickly. Somewhat quickly. We don't want to be here all day. Okay. EOTG top 50. Me and Jack Manuel have begun our top 50 list. This week we put out 45 through 41. The week before, 46 through 50. And get some good debate. Go to OTG Basketball on Twitter. We've been posting. We were dropping a guy Monday through Friday, and then we do like a Saturday wrap up of why the guys are in what placing. So definitely check that out as we continue to go through all 50. And I'll give 50 through 41 now, and we can get your thoughts, Jay, on the list to this point. So at number 50, we have the one and only Kristaps Porzingis. At 49, we have Caris LeVert. At 48, we have Andre Drummond. At 47, we have Zach LaVine. At 46, we have Buddy Hield. At 45, we have Jason Richardson. At 44, we have Danilo Gallinari. At 43, we have Trae Young. At 42, we have Jason Tatum. And at 41, we have Devin Booker. And that is 41 through 50 of the OTG top 50 NBA players. And just to give context, we base this list on what have you done for me lately with a mixture of what can this player do and should do this upcoming season.
So I will keep it short and sweet. I didn't really have, I think 45, you said, I think you said Jason Richardson, Josh Richardson, but
yep. Wrong guy.
No, it's fine. I mean, Jason. That would be a topic of discussion if it was Jay Rich at 45. But I think the one that was the most intriguing to me of this list, I mean, I can't really quibble with the first 10 entries. I'm curious about Devin Booker, and there was some chatter on Twitter about this because I don't really – it's weird because I still don't know if I know what Devin Booker is. I mean, I think at his best, I think Devin Booker is actually probably closer to a top 20, top 25 player, right? But are his numbers empty because he's sort of in, you know, basketball purgatory in Phoenix? Or, you know, I mean, he's the one for me that – I don't know, and I got him up now. I'm just looking at his stats. 26 points a game, 4 rebounds, almost 7 assists. Win shares are, 3.5. I don't know. I think we rightfully called him like most polarizing player in the league, one of them at least. So I'm just really, that was the one to me. I was like, man, I could hear an argument for Devin Booker being, 50, and I could hear an argument for him being, like 20. So I don't know. I'm curious to see what kind of year he has. And I'm still not sure if he's just, I'm high volume numbers guy, or like I say, just a change of scenery would really just benefit him. I don't know. That was the one that I looked at. I was like, huh. This is one to watch.
So I'm on a similar wave with you on Devin Booker. Is I don't know how to gauge what I've seen from Devin Booker. Still crazy young. The offensive game is clearly there. Mm-hmm. Has shown that he's an underrated passer because he's been forced to be a playmaker for this Phoenix Suns team as well. Defensively, I really don't know. It's incredibly hard to gauge a player defensively when his entire team is terrible at defense. Right. I don't know if Booker is bad. I don't know if it's just there's a lack of defenders around him, so he just kind of fits in the mold of being a bad defender. I don't know if it's just going to take effort when a winning situation, because also it's hard to exert effort on every single play when you're getting blown out every single night. So there's a lot of that goes into my assessment of Devin Booker, which – it's hard. I think we need to see the Phoenix Suns at least become, a 10 game below 500 team, which is wild because right now they're like a 20 below win team. So we need that team to start progressing to really figure out what Devin Booker is, because a lot of the number, like for example, that 70 point game he had against the Celtics. Like when people bring that game up to me, like no, he had like 54. And then the Phoenix Suns, started having him drive and got him to the free throw line. And he took, 15 free throws in the last 5 minutes of that game to reach 70. Like, it was the most empty, stat-filling 70 I've ever seen in an NBA game. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think that's tough to gauge. And you're right. On a good night, on a good team, he probably is somewhere in the top 30. Because I don't think there's a giant difference between him and – let's say Donovan Mitchell or D'Angelo Russell to a degree, who we both do have higher than Devin Booker on this top 50 list, who will be released at some point in time, those two guys. But it's tough to gauge him. I think right now he's 41 because I think he's at least shown enough offensive versatility to prove that he's right around 40. And then the guys behind him, I know a lot of people were upset about Andre Drummond being 47. Mm-hmm. He's led the league in rebounding the last 4 years. The best rebounder we have in the NBA right now, clearly averages 16 per game, which is ridiculous. Double-double machine.
Right.
But for me, I feel like this is like peak Andre Drummond already. Like I don't see Andre Drummond becoming much more than what he is, which is a 14 to 15 point per game guy. Can do some stuff around the rim, catch oops, can rebound to a high click, is a subpar defender, and that's it. Like I don't see Andre Drummond's ceiling going much higher, which is why we had him a little bit lower.
Yeah, I think Drummond. I think that's fair assessment of Drummond too. I saw that, and I think, I think he is what he is at this point, which is really good. It's amazing, sort of given his game, like that he's not, you know, because his style, quite frankly, is not really what the NBA is anymore for big men. But yet, he still, I think, to me, is productive.
Yeah. For example, SI. I don't know if you saw the SI Top 100.
I did not.
It's bad. Take a look at it when you can. They had, like, for example, they had Andre Drummond 35. They had Kyrie Irving like 19th, but they had LaMarcus Aldridge and Russell Westbrook over Kyrie. Just a very strange list, to say the least. Definitely take a peek at that one when you get a chance.
Wow. Wait, LaMarcus Aldridge was so like a top 15 kind of guy?
Yeah, LaMarcus Aldridge was top 20. He was like 17, I think.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't think Aldridge is that high. I think there was a big reach.
Yeah, I would agree. And this is SI 100, you said.
Yeah, SIs.
Oh, interesting. Who'd they have number one? I'm just curious.
It wasn't LeBron. I think they had Antetokounmpo.
I mean, he's the MVP. I'm not that. That's fine.
Kawhi was second. I'm pretty sure.
Interesting.
I think LeBron was seventh.
Seventh?
I want to say LeBron was seventh.
Oh wow, that is that's unfortunate. Okay, yeah. So then that list is trash. So I can just look at it for fun. Okay, yeah. Now I know how serious I need to take it. Okay, good deal.
Yeah. Are there any other gripes you have with 41 through 50 of the OTG top 50?
Gallinari, no, that's fine. I think Jason Tatum might be in the Donovan Mitchell boat. I think he came out really hot his rookie year. And by that, I mean, by Donovan Mitchell boat, callback to what we were talking about earlier with Team USA. I think Jason Tatum, I think his progression, I think he'll still be a phenomenal player, but I think his progression will probably be a little slower than what we sort of projected after a great rookie year in Kyrie's absence. I still think the learning curve is still a little steeper than probably we gave it credit for. I don't know that. I mean, he and Trae Young are neck and neck. I would just say I would probably have today. I'd probably flip him and Trae Young, and just going by today, I think I would probably have Buddy Hield ahead of him right now.
Over Tatum.
I think so basically I think Tatum's a little high for my blood.
I think so that's the thing with Tatum. Obviously the rookie year was so good. The dunk on LeBron kind of like rings out in your head. But then last season was so underwhelming, and that entire Celtics team was so underwhelming. It's tough to gauge out what year three will look like because you had so much good in year one and so much in year two.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, you can make the case that Kobe kind of messed with his head because Kobe was like, you just got to be a shooter. You just got to let it fly. Like, be a bucket. And now Tatum's like, all right, I really can't just be a bucket. I got to realize and adapt a full arsenal of weapons to my game. Right. So Tatum's expectations for this season was to average 20 points per game and to make the All-Star game. If he reaches both of those goals, then I think right where he is now, maybe a few spots higher even, is where Jason Tatum is. But I think when me and Jack revised these rankings at the end of November, quite easily Tatum could even be out of the top 50, I think. Given how the start of the season will determine where he lies. But I think going in, this is where we have him, only because we're expecting him to actually take that all-star level leap. But it's quite possible that this guy comes out just as flat, and we're looking at him being outside the top 50.
Well, it'll be interesting because, you know, Kemba, while not Kyrie, I think, in the locker room or even on the court, still a guy that, you know, I think to be effective needs the ball in his hands. And I mean, for all of, you know, Kyrie sort of talking down to the young guys, a problem that was there on the court was just, you know, not enough balls to go around. You know, Gordon Hayward needs shots. Jaylen Brown's a great player in his own right, who's ascending as well. Jason Tatum, I think, needs the ball to be effective. So I think, and this is kind of a common refrain in Boston Celtics circles, right? That, you know, okay, we got Kyrie out, but we're going to see if Kyrie was the problem or was it something else. So I think this will be an interesting growth year for Jason Tatum to see where he ascends. And it's to your point earlier about Team USA. I think in a typical Team USA format, when he's going up against Kobe or KD or whomever every day in Team USA for 4 to 6 weeks, he comes back with a different perspective, different mindset. I don't think that opportunity for growth happened over this USA basketball experience. So going into this year, I'm curious too, like you, what year three sort of holds for his career and his ascension. So that's one that I would want to track in November. And I think Devin Booker would be one too, but it's just so hard. I mean, it's hard to, I'm back on Booker. It's just hard to evaluate guys when they're on shit teams, like middling teams. Okay. You know, you're hovering around 500, you're in the 10th spot, maybe in the conference, we can kind of get an idea, but when you're just like cellar dwellers, just, oh, I don't know. It's just so hard to get an idea of what that is. But anyways, that's just rough.
I also just want to correct myself. They had LeBron third on the SI list.
Oh, look at you. You got, oh man, going to get so SI just, shot up in here. Yeah.
So there's Antetokounmpo and Kawhi ahead of LeBron. I had to fix that. And Kyrie is 15th. LaMarcus Aldridge is 16th. So I had that wrong too. So really, I put out a lot of fake content for like a 5-minute window there. But at least I fact checked myself. Man. But we're better, dude. We're better.
That is perfect. Good for you, man.
Is there let it fly. Is there anything else you want to talk on? Final thoughts?
No. I'm like you to your comment a few minutes ago. It's just a slow time in the NBA training camp. Oh, just a thought. And we don't really have to expand on it, but something I had. I remember a few years ago, and Nick and Jack can probably vouch for this, but I know they did. NBA TV did a Hard Knocks type show called The Association. And I say Nick and Jack because I know they did it with the Nets, the Brooklyn Nets, where it kind of went through training camp. And it was light. I wouldn't say as much access as Hard Knocks, although Hard Knocks is pretty polished. And I mean, the access there is questionable. But it was just kind of going through practice and the same summer thing, but for basketball. And I just thought, like, with the fever pitch of where the NBA is in terms of exposure, I thought that would be a neat project to do with one or two teams, just kind of as we lead up to training camp. And I think it was called The Association, I want to say, on NBA TV. And to do that with, like, the Lakers or Golden State or Brooklyn would be really neat. So or the Clippers would be good. And so I wish I don't know how we push for that, but I think that would be a great content machine for folks. Just maybe that's in the works, and maybe when training camp comes up they'll do that, because I know NBA TV goes live to different training camps, they interview people, and you can actually see practices and things like that. But I think sort of a show for basketball nuts like us, something to sort of content to absorb in these sort of dog days of summer or fall now, actually, would be a really neat project. That was just a random thought I had. And one other random thought, sorry, you can comment on this as well. I saw something where the NBA is going to increase, they're trying to crack down on tampering, basically.
Yeah.
And I was like, don't turn into the NFL. One of the things the NBA has going for it, yeah, people tamper. Yeah, LeBron's meeting with AD for dinner, and they're probably talking about him getting to LA. Like, it's all sort of been a nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Now, if you say, you know, Kawhi calling Paul George and say, go talk to Sam Presti and demand a trade, if you think that's a bridge too far, that's fine. But Sam Presti got compensated really well for that transaction. So to me, all's well that ends well. I just think NBA, you got a good thing going. Your offseason has become a focal point of your league. Don't you know, screwed up with trying to get too cute and be reactive and try to, you know, crack down on guys, because being reactive is what got KD to, what eventually got KD to Golden State and this imbalance, right? Like, super teams, what are we going to stop Miami? And Dan Gilbert wrote this letter. And so, you know, everybody fucked up the salary cap and the super maxes. And now we're in this whole thing about super maxes and guys turning down super max and asking to be traded a year early. That was all reactive, right? Instead of being proactive. I just hope the league is not cut its nose despite its face to try to, you know, be the no fun league like the NFL. Just, I mean, that's what's fun about it. The transactions are fun. The gossip's fun. Blogs are fun.
The reason why we get a full year of content is because we have all of these off the court storylines that develop.
Yep. And I agree. And that's part of the buzz of the league. And so my two thoughts are, we need a Hard Knocks type series on NBA TV, and don't kill the golden goose NBA.
Love the idea of like a Hard Knocks, because it can be hardwood, right? Instead of Hard Knocks, hardwood.
Oh, gee. Hey, marketing guru, Corey.
And with all these stars that change teams, this would be like the perfect year to put something like that in place, because who doesn't want to see LeBron and AD in Los Angeles? Who doesn't want to see Kawhi and Paul George getting acquainted in for the Clippers? Who doesn't want to see Durant and Kyrie? Who doesn't want to see Westbrook and Harden? Like, there are so many big marquee players that switch teams. Who wouldn't want to see, you know, these guys starting to get to know each other, the roster? Like, I think that's I wouldn't be shocked if we saw that within the next 3-5 years of the NBA starting to realize that as these players become more marketable themselves and become their own personal brands, that there is also an avenue for the NBA to further, I don't want to say exploit, but to further build capitalize. Correct. That's a better way to put it. So I like that. And then on the tampering, I saw like it could be up to $10 million. A team is fined for tampering. I don't know how much that still limits tampering. Like, are they going to start putting chips in people's phones? Are we going to start monitoring who's having the conversation? Like, I don't know how you can monitor, like, what's a $10 million worth tampering fine look like compared to like a $3 million? Like, what are the tiers of the stages? Obviously, we don't have the full details of how they would break it down. But again, I don't want this to become the no fun league. This is
right. And that was a discussion I heard, that the owners had a governor's meeting. And I think someone from the NBA said, look, basically, like, do you want this to be, understand what you're asking us? Because you want to start confiscating phones and desktops and making a full-on FBI investigation? Or what do you, you know what I mean? Like, it was kind of like, we can do this, but, you know, you're taking a machete to a mosquito. You know what I mean? Like, we can make it, you know, let us know if you want it to be that. So I think that gave the owner some pause. Because you're right. I mean, the only way to enforce that, and then, you know, and then like anything else, the players would stay one step ahead of that, right? I'll just meet you for dinner. We don't have to right. text
I'll
anything.
I'll talk to you in the tunnel at the All-Star weekend.
Right. So, yeah, I think, and again, it's only people complaining that you're from. I mean, I get it. Like, my favorite player may leave or whatever. Like, it could happen. So that's the bargain you make. You know what I mean? I just, like you say, I don't want it to become something that's not fun and over-policed. And, you know, I think the league is fine. Like,
And also now, we're not really fans of teams as much. Like, you know, we're fans of players at the end of the day. So if one of your guys moves or whatever, like, the fan's going to go with the player more than likely.
I agree.
And that's going to wrap it up for this episode of Full Access Hoops. Jay, where can the people find you?
I am on the Twitter machine at jaychris, J-A-Y-C-H-R-I-S, 206. You can find me there for all of my thoughts, good, bad, and otherwise.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at K-Wall Hoops. That's K-W-A-L Hoops. And be sure to follow the brand on Twitter at OTG Basketball. And head to otgbasketball.com once again for all the greatest and latest up-and-coming content. And also head to dsgntreeoff-the-glass for merchandise. If you use OTG5, you can get $5 off your purchase. We have a lot of shirts available. Until next time, peace out, knuckleheads.